The economic downturn has led to a spurt of bankruptcies, not just major corporations like Chrysler, but also people like you and me. According to Acer, a bankruptcy data management company, there were 7,843 commercial bankruptcy filings just last month, a 23% increase from February and a 65% increase over the number of filings of last March. Here to explain how bankruptcy works and how it affects an individual's credit and finances, as well as a multi-billion-dollar corporation's, are Marie Baudette, editor of Dow Jones Daily Bankruptcy Review and the Wall Street Journal's Bankruptcy Beat blog, and Professor Robert Lawless, a Gallowich-Wizenga faculty scholar at the University of Illinois College of Law and a contributor to the blog Credit Slips. And again, if you have any questions about bankruptcy or if you file for bankruptcy, you can call us at 212-433-9692 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's begin with you, Bob. Bankruptcy is more than simply not having enough money to pay one's bills. Can you define what it means to declare bankruptcy?
Yes, it's kind of like an owning up, right, that you're not going to be able to pay the debts that you have, that you're walking into court and saying, look, the debts I have, there's no way I'm going to possibly pay these back over a reasonable amount of time. Depends on the proceeding, here's either my assets or here's my income. Use that to pay my creditors, and the amount I can't pay is forgiven or discharged, as they say in bankruptcy court.
Is it designed more as a protection for creditors and lenders or as a protection for the consumers and commercial businesses who file for bankruptcy?
Well, it's both, right? They're both goals are in the U.S. bankruptcy system. It's a way to ensure that creditors get paid as much as possible, and there are lots of rules in the bankruptcy courts to ensure that happens. But it's also there to give the honest but unfortunate debtor, as the courts keep liking to say, the honest but unfortunate debtor a chance at a fresh start.
Can someone file for bankruptcy protection and be rejected?
It is possible that someone can file a bankruptcy case and have it dismissed. There are different grounds in the U.S. bankruptcy law under which a case can get dismissed. Abuse of the bankruptcy system is one. If the court feels that perhaps you can pay back your debts in full, that might be a grounds for dismissal. It actually might not be, depending on the nature of the case. Fraud, concealing assets, or other grounds for dismissal. We don't see that happen as commonly as the other situations, but it is possible that your case could be dismissed from bankruptcy court.
Marie, let's talk about corporate bankruptcy. What makes a company go from just operating in the red to having to file for bankruptcy?
Well, a number of things, and as we saw in the case of Chrysler, it was something that had piled up over the course of many years, but what we're seeing lately is companies that carry heavy debt loads are finding themselves unable to refinance that debt. The credit markets are still relatively tight, and it's difficult to find new financing to refinance that and give yourself some breathing room without filing for bankruptcy. So if you get into a situation, a company that's carrying a lot of debt, you can't cover your interest payments, you have debt coming due, and you can't refinance it, it's often the only option a company has.
Aren't there different kinds of bankruptcy? Most people recognize the phrase Chapter 11, but there are a number of different chapters, aren't there?
Well, for corporations, they're primarily just Chapter 11, which allows a company to gives a company some breathing room to reorganize, either through a process that allows it to come up with a repayment plan and pay its creditors, or through a sale. There's also Chapter 7, which is essentially the same process as a consumer would go through, and that means the company's going to liquidate.
Haven't some lawyers been questioning whether Chapter 11 favors creditors more than companies?
Well, that has been a concern over the past, primarily over the past 4 years. That's been a big concern because the bankruptcy laws were changed in 2005 that inserted some more protections for creditors, and there have been some arguments that those changes have made it more difficult for companies to restructure under Chapter 11, and we've seen some evidence of that over the past few years, and a lot of it has to do with those changes combined with the fact that we're in a, the credit markets are still very tight and it's very difficult for companies to get financing to restructure, but also some of those changes have, it seems that some of those changes may be making it a bit more difficult for companies to reorganize.
Well, Bob, let's talk a bit about that, that Act 2005, mm-hmm. Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Act. Was it passed because it was being claimed that too many people were abusing bankruptcy?
Well, that was certainly the public face of it from the consumer credit industry, was that bankruptcy was being abused. Academics who study the bankruptcy system really didn't see that abuse, certainly not in the types of numbers that the credit industry was claiming. Before the law was passed, there were 1.6 million bankruptcy filings in the United States each year, and I'm not going to tell you that out of 1.6 million filings, some of those weren't abusive, but the 2005 law was using a sledgehammer to kill an ant. The problem was nowhere near in proportion to the solutions that were put in place.
So is it really a political thing rather than an economic thing?
It was absolutely a political thing. It was a readjustment of the rules of the game in the middle of a bunch of people's credit card contracts is essentially what happened. And what it primarily did, and I think this was by design, is increase the cost of filing bankruptcy and thereby put off the time under which a consumer would file bankruptcy. And the longer a consumer waits to file bankruptcy, the more they're in this kind of gray zone where they're not yet ready to file bankruptcy, but they're paying high interest rates, huge penalty fees. And that's the time when the consumer is most profitable to the credit card company. The people who are about to file bankruptcy, ironically, are the most profitable people for the credit card companies to have.
Have consumer bankruptcies been reduced as a result of the Act's passage?
They initially dipped right after the law passed. A large part of that was that people filed to beat the law's effective date. Since then, they've been on a steady upward trend to return almost to the levels they were before the 2005 law went into effect. Right now, we look like we're on track to have about 1.45 million bankruptcies this year. Before the law went into effect, there was about 100,000 more per year. So we're getting pretty close to where we were before the law was enacted.
This is Please Explain. We're talking about bankruptcy with Professor Robert Lawless of the University of Illinois College of Law and Marie Baudet of Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopez. I should say Dow Jones and the Wall Street Journal. They're all part of the same company, aren't they, Marie?
Yes, they are.
GM looks like it might end up filing for Chapter 11, too, just after Chrysler did. How did Chrysler's filing for bankruptcy allow it to stay in business because of the reorganization aspect of Chapter 11?
Yes, and Chrysler's bankruptcy plan is very detailed and complicated, but it boils down to a pretty simple sale, a sale that will allow the company to the good so-called good assets of Chrysler to exit bankruptcy under primarily the ownership of the UAW's healthcare trust, and also the U.S. government, the Canadian government, and eventually Fiat, the Italian automaker. The rest of Chrysler, the so-called bad assets of Chrysler, will stay in bankruptcy. They'll be wound down, sold, and I guess the proceeds from the rest of the operations will be used to repay Chrysler's creditors.
It was kind of forced into it, wasn't it, because some of the bondholders balked at taking so little money? Will they be getting the money when all of those assets are sold down?
Yes. We still expect that the senior lenders who were offered about a $2 billion payout for their $6.9 billion in claims against Chrysler will get that $2 billion. That I think it's the way it's working is essentially that $2 billion is being provided by the government in the form of the U.S. government in the form of the loans that it's been getting, providing Chrysler. The government in return will own a stake in Chrysler, the good assets of Chrysler when the good part of Chrysler is sold out of bankruptcy, so to speak. But this came about because, most people are aware, the back in December, Chrysler borrowed about $4 billion from the U.S. government to stay afloat. And in return for that money, the government sent some benchmarks that Chrysler needed to meet. Chrysler went back and asked for more money. The government, with a restructuring plan of its own that the government rejected, and Chrysler was given a month to come up with a plan to find a partner, in this case Fiat, to reach a deal with the unions and to reach a deal with its creditors. It was able to reach a deal with the union, and it was able to reach a deal with Fiat. But like as you mentioned, the lender deal, some lenders held out, so that is what necessitated the bankruptcy filing.
And will they make more money as a result of this, or is it just simply a matter of forcing the issue and then winding up with the same or less?
In this case, I think they'll probably get the same.
So what do they get out of it? And it probably would have been more valuable if Chrysler had survived.
Well, I mean, Chrysler is surviving.
But I mean, without bankruptcy as a stigma on the company.
Well, that's something that many people have debated over the past 6 months or so, whether or not bankruptcy for Chrysler actually would mean fewer drop in sales. Many have argued that the impact on Chrysler sales had already happened, and that bankruptcy had become accepted to the point where the consumer wasn't necessarily going to not buy anymore because Chrysler's reputation, so to speak, was already damaged enough. If the company had not filed for bankruptcy, it would have essentially done the same thing it's trying to do now, and the lenders would have received the payment that they're being offered either way. I think it's possible that the lenders could maybe get more money out of a bankruptcy, depending on how it plays out over the course of the next several years, because the bankruptcy case itself will last for a long time. That said, some of the lenders were arguing that they were being asked to take an unfair cut in their claims compared to what others were being asked to sacrifice.
Now, Bob, when are small businesses able to save themselves through bankruptcy, as some of these major corporations have been able to, or are small businesses more vulnerable? If you're a small business owner or an entrepreneur who's had to file for bankruptcy, does that damage your ability to raise capital to start another business?
Well, there's a number of questions here. Let me unpack those a little bit. Right, first of all, you know, there's a question of what's a small business that ends up in bankruptcy court. I've written about this right there. A lot of the time, what ends up in bankruptcy court is not the small business, but the small business owner.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we see that when you survey and interview people, this is what I do in my research: people who file for bankruptcy, and we ask them, "Were you self-employed at the time you filed?" About 1 in 7 say yes. So there's a significant number of small business owners entering the bankruptcy system. And it's not to save the small business so as much as to rehabilitate their own credit. And what bankruptcy does is it flushes away the old debt from the old business and allows the our entrepreneurs in our country to go back out and start afresh and start another business. One of the myth about entrepreneurship is that somebody goes out in their garage and they start the next Microsoft or before that it was Hewlett Packard, and that's not the way entrepreneurship works. Many entrepreneurs go through several businesses before they find the one that's successful, and part of a healthy small business system is having a healthy bankruptcy system to allow those entrepreneurs to get their fresh start.
But what about when it's on a personal level? There's always that stigma that stays with you the rest of your life, doesn't it?
Well, it goes on your credit report for up to 10 years, but most credit reporting agencies don't keep it on quite that long. One thing that I think a lot of people don't appreciate when they're thinking about bankruptcy, because that's always the big question, right, is how is this going to affect my credit rating, is that if you're in the situation where you're probably having to think about filing bankruptcy, your credit rating is probably already in a very bad position where the bankruptcy isn't going to necessarily going to cause that much bigger of a decline. At that point, it may be the most responsible thing to do is to go through the bankruptcy case and get your affairs in order so you, moving forward, you can be in a better position.
Will you have to exhaust all of your resources to try to pay your debts, like cash in your retirement plan or sell your house?
No, retirement plans are generally protected, and that can be everybody's situation is different, and it's very hard to give general advice about when people should think about filing. But one of the indicators of when you might want to start thinking about seeing a bankruptcy lawyer is when you're starting to dip into retirement savings to pay current debts. To try to, you know, you're trying to dip into your retirement savings to pay for housing or food. That's when it's time to start going to think about a bankruptcy lawyer, because retirement savings are going to, generally speaking, be protected. Homes, again, there's some protection for homes in bankruptcy court. It varies a lot depending on what state you're in. Some states have very generous protections, other states don't. And although it's a federal bankruptcy court, it is state law that determines the amount of equity you get to keep in your home. And then in terms of exhausting resources, yes, and the answer is you have to exhaust most of your resources. You're allowed to keep some assets, the home, we just talked about that, a car, and again, it's going to vary from state to state what you're going to be allowed to keep, but you shouldn't be expecting to keep luxury items, you know, very expensive assets. Those are going to have to be sold in a bankruptcy case.
We're talking about bankruptcy on today's Please Explain with Professor Robert Lawless, Gallowich-Wezenga Faculty Scholar at the University of Illinois College of Law, and Marie Baudet, editor of Dow Jones Daily Bankruptcy Review and the Wall Street Journal's Bankruptcy Beat blog. And we will take a little break, come back in just a few moments with your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we're back with our guests, Marie Baudet of Dow Jones and Robert Lawless, professor at the University of Illinois College of Law. We're talking about bankruptcy here on today's Please Explain. And before we get to our first call, you mentioned that state laws are different, Professor Lawless. Is that the reason that Chrysler filed for bankruptcy in New York State rather than Michigan, even though it is based in Michigan?
No, that's actually not the reason. We're talking about both consumer and business cases here. Although it's the same court system and the same law, there are substantial differences between business and consumer cases. The reason Chrysler filed in New York City is very different than the reason consumers may have differences in state law. There's a very big controversy in the corporate bankruptcy community right now about the places that corporations can file bankruptcy. A big corporation the size of Chrysler can pretty much pick the place where it files because of the way the bankruptcy laws are written. That's not an option that consumers have or a smaller business has.
Do you want to add anything, Marie, or should I just go to the first call?
Well, I would second what Bob said, that there is a big controversy about that called forum shopping or venue shopping, and
they pick New York, so we must be the kind of place that a Chrysler would want to declare bankruptcy in.
Yes, and the most major corporations file for Chapter 11 protection either in the New York court, the New York City court, or in Wilmington, Delaware. They tend to handle most of the big cases, and for a number of reasons. In the case of Chrysler, one of the reasons that was cited was the experience of the court in handling big cases.
And Wilmington is because Joe Biden used to be the senator from that state. That was meant to be a joke, but we'll see if it's true or not. Sue from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. If you become ill, whether it's physical or emotional or whatever, or you just can't handle your affairs, and you get through that, and you're using credit cards to help you to get by, there comes a point at which you realize that it's just too much, and that sense of failure. Once you get past the sense of failure and the shame and the guilt that comes with it, I found that by talking to some of the hotlines for financial hotlines was helpful in making me understand that sometimes in life these you just are going to go through this, and it is the most responsible thing to get into a bankruptcy. But then there's the problem of finding a proper lawyer. The first lawyers I found were $3,000 and $5,000 for a simple consumer bankruptcy, and I couldn't afford them. So as I kept on spending money to and got onto SSI and then finally disability, that took years. And once I was in that situation, now I was looking for a pro bono lawyer because I had barely enough money for food. So the pro bono lawyers in New York City, while there are too few of them for the needs, and a lot of the lists have been closed. But, I mean, I'm encouraging anybody who needs to do this, of course, to pursue trying calling 311 and calling, you know, the legal aid and such like that to see if they can reopen it or get more people. But in the meantime, I'm waiting months and months and months to even get on the list. And I was lucky enough to get on the list, but still I'm waiting. And while this is all happening, very quietly, the civil court, sometimes a creditor will proceed to want to get a judgment against you in civil court. And when they're doing that, they don't necessarily properly serve you. You don't know maybe it's happening. Some will send you a letter, some will not. And when that happens, when the civil court actually has a default judgment against you because you didn't answer it, or you did and they didn't agree, in prior time, it used to be in New York State that your tax-exempt funds, such as disability, such as public assistance or alimony or unemployment or Social Security, veterans benefits, those used to be exempt in full.
This is the longest question I have ever had on the show.
I'm going to say it this way. New York State very quietly changed the law January 1st. They made 2,500 of those monies exempt from a levy, a bank levy, and they make you go through hell by holding your account to prove and pay a big fee for $125 to prove that your monies are exempt while you're in the process of being ill.
Is this something, I'm asking my guests, something that would be specific to New York, or is this sort of thing that we see all around the country?
Who did this? I hear that similar story all around the country. We have similar problems here in Illinois with income that is supposed to be beyond the ability of creditors to get it. But the way the system ends up working is it's up to the debtor to prove that the income's exempt rather than the way it should be working, which is the creditor should be leaving it alone in the first place. I wish the caller the best of luck with her problems. The comments, the very, very helpful comments, because the story is something that we hear from talking with people with financial distress all the time.
And here's another one that somebody wrote in, and it's also a little long, although he wrote it in, so it'll end with me. I filed for bankruptcy in 1998 after a credit counseling service told me to stop paying my bills. My perfect payment record quickly crashed my score, and I was left with no choice. Consumers should be aware of these companies as they're more prevalent than ever. Still, it was the best thing I ever did then. I was still able to buy an apartment once I got on my feet and now financially stable. But I couldn't do that today. Know that this decision can haunt a person for the rest of his life. Sure, the law says it's removed after 7 years from your credit records. However, any creditor now knows that if you are, for example, 45 years old and your credit history is only 7 years old, that's as good as having a bankruptcy on your record. No matter how spotless your record now is, or no matter how much money you make, this is a loophole in the law that dogs me to this day, and I make a good deal of money by most standards. It needs to be addressed along with all the other injustices in the U.S. card industry.
So, well, you know, well, again, I guess it was an email comment, right?
That's
a very, very good point. There are a lot of companies out there that purport to be of assistance to so-called debt management plans that consumers need to be very, very careful with. There are many of those companies that are not very helpful at all and, in fact, are just preying on people who are already in a bad situation. So, you know, it need to be very careful before going to a private company for debt management. Many of the things that they would do for a consumer, if not all of the things, are things that consumers can do for themselves by contacting the creditors and trying to work out some type of alternative payment plan.
Let's go to another caller. Eric, hi, you're on the air. Eric from Queens.
Yeah, hi. I lost my job a few months ago, and I went back to school. And I'm at a point right now where I have to choose between school and paying off the rest of my credit. I actually have a decent credit rating, but I was wondering if I do have to stop paying the credit cards, I'd also have to move and put some things into storage, and there'd be a lot of expenses associated with that. Would that have any hindrance on my claim?
Well, as I mentioned before, it's very difficult to give out individual advice over the radio.
And since it changes from state to state.
Yeah, it changes so much. And if you're having financial problems, the best thing to do is to go see a legal professional and talk to them about your different options. The caller mentioned education. And one thing that many people are aware of, but just to make sure, is that student loan debt is generally not dischargeable. In other words, cannot be forgiven in a bankruptcy case. And, you know, I keep using that word generally because that's, again, the one of the reasons I really hesitate to give out individual advice over the radio is that everybody's situation is different. And we can make a lot of general statements about the bankruptcy law, but it gets so specific that it's everybody's got to get legal advice for themselves.
Well, here's another listener with a problem. Alfred from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I had a bankruptcy a couple of years ago, and I had a job, and then I lost the job. And then I was well qualified for a lot of jobs, but they won't hire you if you have a bankruptcy. Nobody will hire you. I mean, literally nobody. They even had a thing in USA Today that five states challenge employer credit checks because you're basically in a debtor's prison.
Yeah, that's something that the law in 1978, the current law we have, dates back to 1978 and tried to address and did a very poor job of trying to address employment discrimination after a bankruptcy case. There is some protections in the bankruptcy law against employment discrimination for people who filed bankruptcy. I think it's probably fair to characterize them as extremely weak and really not helpful at all.
Marie, last year there were about 1.1 million bankruptcies, a rise of 32% over 2007. Is that totally due to the economic downturn, do you think?
Well, as Bob said earlier, a lot of that's the total number of bankruptcy filings. That includes consumer and commercial bankruptcies. A lot of there was a dip in the number of filings after the law changed in 2005, and as Bob said, that was largely due to the fact that a lot of people rushed to file before the law changed. And then the number did steadily start to increase, and then we have seen a bigger increase over the past year or year and a half or so because of obviously the financial crisis and the recession. Commercial bankruptcy filings have been rising pretty steadily, and we expect to see that continue for the rest of the year and probably get worse towards the end of the year as companies kind of reach the end. As you know, they continue to struggle. They exhaust their options during this downturn, and then maybe even as the economy starts to recover, we'll see a lot of those companies finally reach the end and have to file. So we might actually see more bankruptcy filings among companies towards the end of this year and into next year.
In early 2008, Congress was considering legislation that would allow judges in Chapter 13 cases to lower interest rates and amounts owed on primary residences. That seemed like it would have helped with the foreclosure crisis. Why didn't it pass?
Yeah, that would have helped a lot. It actually there was a vote in the Senate I guess now about a week ago where that bill was defeated. It didn't pass, for the same reasons that the 2005 law did pass. The financial services industry has a very good lobby.
So it doesn't matter whether the Democrats are in control or the Republicans are in control. The lobby is effective either way?
The 2005 bankruptcy law had support on both sides of the aisle, and this change was opposed by both Democrats and Republicans. So this is not a Republicans tended to vote for the bankruptcy law in 2005. Democrats tended to vote against it, but still, the support and opposition crosses party lines often.
A listener asks, is there any difference in terms of obligations when a for-profit company and a not-for-profit company declare bankruptcy?
Well, yes. I mean, there can be. I mean, there are also some issues sometimes with eligibility to file for a nonprofit corporation, but those are pretty technical, and I'm not sure that's what the listener was referring to. But
I don't know it was written.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
Yeah. So, you know, in a Chapter 11, the law requires the company to return basically its value to its creditors. You know, and we do that by estimating the value and how much income it can take in the future. And you know, with a nonprofit, it's the same. You just don't have shareholders, so the nonprofit would still have to estimate its income going forward and figure out how much of that income, what the percentage could be repaid to creditors out of that income.
Jack left a comment on our show page. Please explain the term cram down. What does it mean for those in a commercial corporate bankruptcy, and what was Congress trying to do with a cram down for personal bankruptcies?
Well, so cram down is the idea that the bankruptcy court approves the plan over the objection of creditors. So the term comes from the idea of cramming down the throat of creditors. The idea is that the bankruptcy court's made a factual finding that the creditors under the plan are getting as much as they would if they were outside of bankruptcy court. And under that, the theory is, well, the creditors really have no grounds to object, and the court will approve the plan despite the creditor's negative vote.
Now, what happens when you're married to somebody who has to declare bankruptcy, whether you're living together or you're separated but still married? Are the spouse's assets protected?
Well, so again, this is going to vary a lot from state to state, depending on the type of whether it's a community property state or not. Spouses can file what's referred to as a joint case. They don't always. It largely depends upon who's obligated on the debts that the couple might have.
Now, Marie, what are you seeing on your blog? Are people rather unhappy these days?
You mean
when people leave comments on the Bankruptcy Beat blog?
Well, it depends. A lot of people, you know, take for example the Chrysler situation. Their emotions have been running pretty high over that because you have a lot of union workers who've been taking cuts over the years and making concessions over the past few years to keep these companies going, and they've in Chrysler situation they struck a deal that gives them the union's healthcare trust essentially 55% of the company, the reorganized Chrysler. That said, they were sort of pitted against these holdout creditors in the Chrysler case. Who were upset that they were being asked. They were senior creditors. They had the first claim on the company's assets.
We have to leave it there, alas. I'm sorry. Marie Baudette of Dow Jones, Robert Lawless of the University of Illinois College of Law, thank you so much for participating in today's Please Explain on Bankruptcy.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was great to do it.